On the boardwalk, I waved at Rusty and walked over to join him, telling him about Penn and Blackjack.
Top gun, Sheriff.
And fast. I seen him work up near the Oregon-Washington line. Little town in the Umatillas. Don't never sell them short. They're among the best. Things is heating up, Rusty.
I wonder who hired him.
I don't know. Was that feller who backed you up this afternoon Jeff Baker?
Yeah, Pepper's brother. He's a square shooter all the way.
I figured as much.
You got anyone in mind for additional deputy, Sheriff?
I don't know no one to even mull over. You got any ideas?
Matter of fact, I do. Remember I told you about them two punchers I rode with, Bertel and DeGraff?
Yeah.
They're living in an old line shack north of town. They're good boys, both of them.
Tell me why they got fired.
They didn't. They quit. They didn't like what was happening. Big Mike said he was gonna run them both out of the county. That was tried a couple of times. They're still here.
Gun hands?
No, they're just punchers. They're probably better than average with a short gun, but they ain't real fast. They will make their first shot count, though.
Hell, that's half the fight. You ride out in the morning, fetch them boys into town. Let me talk to them. At the schoolyard, it was all lantern lit. The lanterns hung from ropes, with fancy streamers dangling every which way. The adults were sipping punch, and the kids was playing and running around and having fun. The boys was pulling the girls' pigtails, and the girls was pretending they was all upset about it. And it made me kind of sad. This type of gathering sometimes does that to me. Here I was, 28 years old, I think, give or take a year, and I'd never had nothing much to speak of. I'd been drifting for a good many years. Oh, I'd seen the country, all of it west of the Big Muddy, but the feeling of belonging to someone, that was something I'd never known. Now don't get me wrong, I love the High Lonesome. I like the smell of a wood fire and the cool mornings and the feeling that there ain't another human person within 100 miles of it. But, well, you can't think about that too much or too often. Tends to get a body down. These folks now, all happy and gay, they had that feeling of belonging, and it showed. Oh, many of them didn't have all that much, cash-wise, but they had somebody. Well, hell, you know what I mean. And then I seen Pepper. That brightened me up real quick, in one way. And yet, in another, it produced a feeling that I never recollected having before. Kind of a warm, gooey sort of feeling. I shuddered like a big shaggy buffalo and walked around the yard. Rich gal like Pepper Baker wasn't gonna have nothing to do with a two-bit cowboy turned sheriff like me. But she did send me that note. There was three guys with a fiddle and guitar and squeeze box cranking out the dancing tunes. That left me out in the hog waller, because when it comes to fancy footwork with a female, I got two fence posts for feet. So I just stood around on my fence posts, looking like a lonesome hound dog while Pepper danced every dance. I couldn't help but wonder how Big Mike felt about that. Him having her all staked out, at least in his mind. Pepper took a break from her dancing, leaving a lot of disappointed men standing around looking glum. Damned if she didn't walk straight up to me. I took off my hat when she come up.
Put your hat back on, Sheriff. You might catch a chill out here.
She stood looking at me with them blue eyes. That syrupy feeling sort of oozed over me again. I really didn't know what to make of it. At least, that's what I kept telling myself. Enjoying yourself, Miss Pepper? At least I hadn't tripped over my feet yet again.
I'd enjoy it more if I knew why you haven't asked me to dance.
I never learned how. You get me out there on that flat and you'd have sore feet for a month.
Well, at least you're honest about it. I better warn you, Sheriff. What is your name? I'm not going to call you Sheriff forever.
Cotton.
Just Cotton?
Just Cotton. She smiled. A mischievous look creeping into her eyes.
Are you wanted by the law, Cotton?
Oh, no, ma'am.
Well, if I leaned real close, would you whisper it in my ear?
All right. She leaned close. Real close. I could smell the flowery perfume she was wearing and the clean scent of her hair. Pickings. I knew what she was gonna do. Everybody does the same thing. She really had to struggle to keep from busting out laughing and drawing a lot of attention to us. She put her little hand on my arm and kind of guided me along out of the lamplight. I got a little edgy about that.
Not really your last name, Cotton.
Sure is.
But Cotton is not your real first name. Surely not.
Well, yes, ma'am. It sure is. My daddy had a funny sense of humor. We stopped under a tree. The lights and the whooping and hollering kids and the music and the gaiety seemed to be far away. It was kind of a nice feeling. She leaned against the trunk of the tree and fanned herself with a little hanky.
Oh, I declare, I do believe I've gotten too warm dancing.
I was getting a little warm myself. I got a hell of a lot warmer when she undone the top three buttons of her dress and fanned her pale skin with that little hanky. It was just a damn good thing I didn't have no chaw tobacco in my mouth. I'd have swallowed it for sure. I looked in every direction there was, except the upper part of her. You was gonna warn me about something, Miss Pepper?
Oh, so you can be trusted too, Sheriff.
Kind of a strange thing to say, I thought.
Mike Romaine would have had me raped by now.
She buttoned herself back up.
Forgive me?
Sure. I kind of enjoyed it, to tell you the truth.
That's good. I was beginning to think that you were made of stone.
Oh, far from it, ma'am.
Would you please stop calling me ma'am?
Yes, ma'am. She took my arm.
Come on, let's walk back. Tongues are wagging now. Cotton, I may have set you up for trouble. If so, I'm sorry. I simply cannot abide sharing my box with that Mike Romaine another time.
There was two ways to take that, but since I figured her for a nice lady, I elected for the fried chicken side of it.
Big Mike has made up his mind that I'm the woman for him. No one else will bid against him.
Why?
They're afraid of him. He's crazy.
I didn't figure his wagon was loaded full. And you want me to bid again him, right?
Yes.
I could feel her eyes on me in the darkness.
For more than one reason, Cotton.
I could see my ranch fading away into the distance. Cause if it took all that was in that hat, I was gonna have a taste of Pepper's box. I'll go as high as the traffic will bear, Pepper. Her eyes had kind of a frightened look in them.
No one has ever gone over $10.
I got a hunch this one will. She reached into a pocket of her dress, a real pretty gingham dress, not fancy like the gowns on Joy and Wanda. She reached down and took my hand, pressing something into it. Several double eagles. Now, ma'am.
No. If you're brave enough to bid against Big Mike on my behalf, the least I can do is pay for it. Don't worry. My mother came from a very wealthy family back east. Old money. And I have money of my own. Besides, we're doing this with Father's permission and blessing.
Figuring anybody else might get stomped or killed, but Big Mike should have more sense than to brace the sheriff.
You're quick, Cotton.
I wasn't really sure what she meant by old money. I guess she meant that she was rich. All kinds of suspicions jumped into my head. She looked up at me in the dim light from the lanterns.
You don't trust me, do you?
She didn't wait for me to put my foot in my mouth.
You're different, Cotton. And kind of cute. And you're not afraid of Big Mike or anyone, so it seems. Cotton, you're either a very brave man or a fool. Time will tell where that takes the both of us. Now please walk me back. The bidding will start in a few minutes.
Big Mike and some of his boys was all lumped up together, and they give me some hard looks when they spotted me and Pepper. I just smiled at him and tipped my hat to Big Mike. That made him so mad he looked like he was fixing to swell up and explode. The little band stopped playing, and some lady that I didn't know stepped up on the raised platform.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're so happy you came tonight. It looks like y'all are having fun. great. Just great. Because now comes the best part of the night. It's time to bid on some fancy home cooking.
I was very conscious of Big Mike's eyes on me as the bidding got underway. Pepper had joined up with her Pa and Ma and brother. I didn't know where Rusty had gotten himself off to, but I figured he was close by. Like most of these socials I'd been to, and that wasn't all that many, all the gents pretty well knew in advance how to identify what box they wanted to bid on, and it was almighty easy to tell who was sweet on who. I'd spotted Pepper's box right off, and it was coming up next. I let Big Mike open the bidding.
I bid $2.
Oh, we have $2. Will anyone...
I bid $5.
Big Mike looked at me, and the expression on his face was anything but nice to look at.
I'll go 10.
We have...
Make it 15.
Rusty come up beside me.
Pepper's daddy told me to stand by with these in case you needed them.
He shook his fist. I can't figure this, Rusty.
Oh, I can't. You're an honorable man. You ain't got no sense, but I reckon Pepper can't see that.
$50.
$60.
I chanced to look down, and Rusty opened his fist. Close to $100 in coin. I shook my head.
$75.
I looked at him. Even across the yard, I could tell his face was flushed.
$100! Ought to be a piece of apple pie in there for that bid.
A few of the ladies laughed. I'd find out what they was laughing about shortly. Big Mike whirled around, facing me and glaring at me.
By God, I'd like to see the color of your money, Sheriff.
Oh, I got it. And if you don't believe that, then I reckon you'd be calling me a liar.
With my right hand, I swept back my coat, exposing the butt of my .44. Big Mike stepped away from the crowd, dropping his hands to his guns.
Sold to the sheriff! Next box!
God damn you!
You sure are a sore loser.
I'll knock you down to size someday.
Yeah? Well, you a big feller, all right. I never knowed crap come stacked that high.
Man, he turned about 5 different shades of red. He took a step toward me.
No trouble here, Mike. There's always another time.
I didn't think Mike was going to pay attention to his boss's words. He was so mad he was shaking. Finally, he turned around, shoving both men and women out of his way. He stomped off into the night. AJ looked square at me.
You're a fool, Sheriff.
What I am is hungry. How about you? Y'all gonna stick around and join in the festivities?
I do not wish to associate with ruffians and common trash like you.
Joy gave her head a toss. AJ and Joy, Matt, and Wanda all trooped off, heads held high. I looked around. Lydell Townsend was looking at me, a grin on his face. He shook his head and wandered off.
With them gone, now we can all have some fun!
That's right, folks. We have a box right here. A lovely meal prepared by...
You made a bad enemy, Sheriff.
The voice came from my left side. It was Pepper's brother, Jeff, and he was smiling at me.
Yeah, I reckon so.
I'm sorry to hear you're hungry, Sheriff.
Why?
Well, let's just say I hope you have an iron stomach. My sis can't fry chicken worth a damn.
I'd eat worse. Just don't ask me where or when. It might have been that winter I got snowed in early up near the mussel shell and cooked a coyote. Up to this point, that was the awfulest food I had ever tried to eat. Pepper was trying to keep from laughing at the expression on my face.
You don't have to eat it. I'm really a good cook. I just can't fry chicken.
I wanted to be real tactful, so I didn't say nothing. She covered her mouth with a hand. I laid that drumstick down on a napkin and half expected it to walk off. I wished it would.
Pepper,
Would you like to stroll down to the hotel dining room and have supper?
I sure would. I'm hungry.
We walked over to her ma and pa, with her prodding me along like a kid going to the woodshed for a hiding. She introduced us. They seemed like real nice people, and it was then that I knew what she meant about old money. Rolf and Martha Baker had that quality that comes with breeding. Just like with cows or horses, it wasn't nothing that stuck out obvious-like, but it was sure there. Martha looked me in the eye.
Thank you for standing up to Big Mike, Sheriff. Peppa cannot tolerate that animal, and neither can we.
Martha indicated her husband.
You're the first person who's had the courage to bid against him.
She smiled, looked like she wanted to bust out laughing.
It didn't take you and Peppa long to finish eating.
I got it then. Pepper had fixed that awful chicken deliberate for Big Mike. No, ma'am. Not long. But my mind was working hard. Out here in the West is where a man saddles his own horses and kills his own snakes. Yet this man, Rolf Baker, owner of one of the three biggest spreads in the territory and a wealthy man to boot, somehow lacked the sand to stomp a snake named Big Mike Romaine. It just didn't make no sense to me. And I knew that he knew I was wondering about it. I looked Rolf Baker direct in the eyes.
Where's all your gun slick, sir?
I don't hire gun hands, Sheriff. My men can all use guns, of course, but they're hired as cowboys.
Well, that's good to know, sir. The only gun hawk I ain't seen around here is Clay Allison, and he'd probably be here if he wasn't in prison.
As is Wild Bill Longley and John Wesley Hardin and a score of other men who fancied violence over order and decency. The West is maturing, Sheriff. Slowly.
Was he trying to tell me something? I don't know. But he was right. Law and order was coming to the woolly West. But it was almighty slow in getting here. And when it did get here, with all the lawyers and fancy words, something big and grand and simple but workable would vanish with its coming.
Does the coming of law and order make you sad, Sheriff?
Kind of. If the lawyers is gonna all be like Stokes.
Stokes is a pompous ass.
Law and order and gentle folks would be a grand thing. But in this part of the world, that's gonna come only after the gun smoke is blowed away.
I fear you are correct, Sheriff. Well, anyway, you and Pepper had best go have your dinner.
Another sign of class. Out here, it's called supper.
Pepper's fried chicken is at best unpalatable.
I wasn't real sure what that word meant, but if it meant that chicken couldn't be et, I'd be the first to agree. Pepper could stow away the grub as good as any cowboy I'd ever seen. We talked on the walk to the dining room and chatted while we were waiting for the food to be brung us, and it was good food. But conversation while we was eating was sparse. She was a rancher's daughter, all right. Eating was serious business, with no time for talking. With a twinkle in her blue eyes, she looked over at me.
I told you I was hungry.
I showed a bit of tact by not agreeing. Hungry? She ate like a just-woke-up grizzly. You're gonna have a long ride back to the ranch tonight.
No, we're staying in town with Dr. and Mrs. Harrison. Have you met them yet?
Not yet. I hope I don't on no professional basis. Over coffee, which she loved as much as I did, she brung me up on the gossip. And she confirmed Rusty's suspicions about a range war. Her dad and the ladies at the Arrow brand was trying to stay out of it, but it didn't look good. She told me about the night riders that struck every now and then, burning people out and killing. And night riders was something that I just didn't hold with. I walked her to the doctor's house, met Dr. Harrison, and said my goodnights. Standing there, alone with her on the porch, she smiled at me. And I got that gooey feeling again. But I might have been coming down with the collie wobbles or something.
Hi, I'm coming. It was Monday morning, about an hour before dawn, when the hammering on the front door woke up me and Rusty. I answered the door in my long johns, my pistol in my hand. A couple of farmers, by the way they was dressed, and a sooty, smoky smell was lingering around them.
Night Riders, Sheriff. They hit the Simmons place. Killed Broderick and burned him out. You come take a look.
Rusty, you know where that is? He tossed me my britches. He was buttoning up his shirt.
About 10 miles out to the northwest, close to the Circle L spread.
Buttoning up my britches, I turned to the men.
You want to stay here and rest, or ride back out with us?
We'll go with you, Sheriff.
We could smell the charred wood long before we come up on what was left of the place, and that wasn't much. It had been a little two-bit nester outfit. But what pissed me off was that the Night Riders, and I hate them all, had shot the cows and mules and hogs. In the light of God's dawn, it was pretty pathetic. A wore-out-looking woman in a wore-out dress stood over the blanket-covered body of her husband. Half a dozen tow-headed boys and girls gathered around the woman, the youngest clinging to her skirts. I just felt sick at my stomach as we listened to her story. Glancing over at Rusty, I could tell the scene had touched him just as hard as it done me.
They came up out of the night just after midnight, I think. They were about 20 or so Night Riders. They all wore hoods. Broderick grabbed up his shotgun and ran out to meet them, but they shot him down.
I lifted the scorched blanket and eyeballed the man. He was a mess. Those big, brave riders had pumped what looked to be 20 or 30 rounds into him. Then someone got up close and shot the man right between the eyes. The powder burns were plain on his bloody forehead.
They shot him down right in front of the kids, Sheriff. And then they grabbed up and took Marie with them.
Who's Marie?
My oldest girl. She's just turned 16.
Can you describe any of the men? Any of their horses? Just give me something to go on. Anything.
I saw no brand left or right flank, Sheriff. I'm sorry.
Of course, we all know who they was, Sheriff.
Yeah, I know. But proving it is going to be something else.
Look here, Sheriff. They rode towards the northeast, Sheriff.
Rusty stood across the yard looking at tracks.
Right over yonder is the edge of Circle L Range. They probably rode right into a herd to cover their tracks.
Nodding my head, I looked around. The damn Night Riders hadn't left nothing. They deliberately trampled over the new plowed garden, shot the animals, then torched the house and barn. It was just a miracle that none of the little kids got killed. Brave men all. The woman touched my arm. I met her sad-looking eyes.
Will you find Marie, Sheriff?
Yes, ma'am. I'll find her. Found her. Naked, raped, and dead from a broke neck. She'd been a pretty girl, even with the ravages of poverty touching her young face. I felt like puking. I found her patched and torn nightgown lying off to one side, and from the looks of her, more than one man had taken his pleasures with her. Looking up at the sounds of hooves, I seen two punchers riding my way. Slipping the thong off the hammer of my .44, I waited, then relaxed when I could make out the brand. Arrow.
Jesus Christ!
The fellow looked at the body of Marie. I knew that badge or no badge hanging on my shirt, I'd better start talking and do it swift, because messing with a woman in the West was the fastest way I knew of to get your neck stretched. One of them punchers done got his rope out.
Easy, boys. This here is Marie Simmons. Night Riders killed her father, burned out their homestead, and did this to her.
Oh, damn. That's just wrong. I don't like nesters and barbed wire, but this is awful.
I'll go get Miss Maggie and Miss Jane. We'll bring a buckboard.
I took the slicker off my saddle skirt and gently covered the naked girl. I felt some better when that was done. It just wasn't decent, her laying there with no clothes on.
Them was good folks for nesters.
He plopped his hat back on his head.
I knowed them all, and that there was a good girl. The woman know who done it?
She has suspicions, just like me and you. But proving it is something else.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? I'm Ben, by the way.
Cotton, Sheriff Cotton. We shook on it. Both of us done our best not to look at the slicker-covered body with the bare feet sticking out.
Ben, what's your opinion of what's happening around here? If it's an upcoming range war, why? Nesters and barbed wire?
Barbed wire had been slowly working its way west since first being introduced back in the early 70s. Personal, even though I could see where it might serve some purpose, I didn't like it. All kinds of barbed wire was being strung, and people was getting killed for doing it. I still carried the scars on me from where I'd gotten all tangled up in it once. And I mean, once.
Strictly personal opinion, Sheriff?
Have at it.
I think Lawrence and Mills want to be kings of this area. I don't think it's nothing but greed, pure and simple.
I was sort of ruminating about gold or maybe oil.
There might be enough gold around here to fill a tooth. As for oil, I don't think so. I never seen none of it. And I've been around here a long time.
It's just hard to believe that anybody as rich and powerful as Lawrence and Mills would sink so low as to do that.
It'll get worse, Sheriff, believe it.
I believed it. Maggie Barrett and Jean Knight come riding out with the buckboard. They was gals in their mid to late 40s, I guess, and they rode astride just like a man. Each of them had a six-gun belted around her waist and a rifle in the saddle boot. They looked like they knew how to use the weapons, too, and would. I met them look for look.
I'm Maggie, and that's Jean.
She jerked a gloved hand toward the other woman.
And you're the new big bad sheriff, huh?
I don't know about the big or bad, ma'am, but I'm the sheriff. Jean Knight looked me over.
You're mighty young, but you got a hell of a reputation behind you, Sheriff Cotton.
She let her eyes drift to the slicker-covered body.
And what are you aiming to do with the sorry son of a bitch who done that?
More than one, ma'am. I aim to find them, arrest them, try them, and then hang them.
And if their names are Mills or Lawrence or Romaine?
They pull their britches on same way anybody else does, ma'am. She stared at me. She was still a handsome woman. 20 years back, she'd been beautiful.
I think you'll do, Sheriff Cotton. I think you'll do to ride the river with, if you live that long.
Them gals personal loaded Marie into the buckboard, and none of us men standing around was too unhappy about that. Rusty had joined me and Ben, and then some of the Baker's Quarter Moon punchers come riding up. All of them give me the once over, taking in my butt forward left hand 44.
Whoever did this deserves a noose, and I got a dandy one right here.
It'll be done legal-like. There'll be no goddamn vigilantes riding. Sometimes they're just as bad as night riders. While waiting, I'd done some circling on foot, trying to come up with just one track that stood out. About my fifth try, I had found one. A horseshoe had been worn or chipped to form a V on the left side of the shoe. Now we got that straight. Rusty, Ben, you Quarter Moon boys, come over here and look at this. I pointed out the track to him.
Never seen it, Sheriff.
No, I haven't seen it before.
Ben, you busy?
Not if you need help. What's on your mind, Sheriff?
You know two old boys named DeGraff and Bertel?
Hell, Sheriff, they couldn't have done this.
I never said they done nothing. I want to talk to them about being deputies. Can you find them and have them meet me in town?
Consider it done, Sheriff. Yeah.
Where are we going, Sheriff?
Wherever this track leads, Rusty. Let's ride. We was on Circle L Range. We all knew it. And no one amongst us would have bet against where that track was gonna lead. And it done it. Sure as shooting. It was mid-morning when we rode up to the great house. House?
It was a damn mansion. Looked as out of place on the range as a turd in a punch bowl. And it made me mad. It was some unreasonable, and I knew it, but it done it anyways. I was thinking about them poor nesters back yonder. Burned out with not even a pot left to boil water in. The night riders even burned the privy. And here was this palace, where the tracks of the night riders led straight forth. All that was mingled in with the sight of that dead girl, raped, neck broke. I just got mad. I rode straight up to the front of that house and looped Critter's reins around the hitch rail and stomped up the steps onto the porch. One of the mech servants seen me and run back into the rear of the house. I kept on hammering on that door until old AJ himself jerked open the door.
What is the meaning of this outrage?
Get out here!
I beg your pardon, you saddle bum!
I grabbed Mr. Big Shot by the shirt front and hauled him out. Then I shook him like a hound dog with a rabbit in its mouth. I shoved Mr. Hotsy Totsy down in a porch chair. The meaning of this is that Night Riders burned out the Simmons homestead, killed Broderick Simmons, then raped and killed his 16-year-old daughter Marie. That's the meaning of this. Big Mike and about a dozen other hands come a-running over. Rusty shoved the barrels of a greener under Big Mike's chin.
First one reaches for iron, I'll blow his fat head off.
Big Mike's eyes got to looking like saucers. Jerking AJ to his feet, I shoved him down the steps and toward the corral and barn. That hoof print brought us here. It came right from where the Simmons girl got killed. AJ's face turned white as a fresh-washed petticoat. As the grounds filled with Circle L riders, most of them gun hands, or at least drawing fighting wages, the Arrow and Quarter Moon boys circled the yard. Rusty, find that horse with the marked shoe. I kept an eye on Big Mike while Rusty started looking. Mike was so mad his face was all mottled looking. But he kept his hands away from his guns. I sort of wished he would try to grab iron, and I think he knew it. It didn't take Rusty long to find the horse. He led him right into the yard, and I checked the shoe. There it was, the V standing out plain as egg on your face. I looked at AJ and then at Mike.
You're both under arrest.
On what charge? That horse don't prove nothing.
Ordering the murder of Broderick Simmons and aiding and abetting them who done the killing.
Gene and Maggie, who arrived with more arrow hands, was both smiling kind of grim-like.
You'll never make it stick, Sheriff.
Maybe not, but I'm sure gonna give it all I got.
You're a fool!
DeGraff and Bertel was waiting in the office when I come inside, pushing AJ and Mike ahead of me. George Waller was in the office too.
You approve of these old boys being deputies?
I do, Sheriff.
I looked at him.
You boys want to wear a badge?
DeGraff scratched his whiskers.
Beats hell out of starving.
He looked at AJ.
And cutting out an occasional steer for food.
Goddamn thief!
Hush! Now, George, swear him in while I lock these two up.
Man, but they was hot under the collar.
Rusty, you and DeGraff and Bertel make damn sure nobody breaks our prisoners out. I'm going down to Doc's place to see what he's found out about Marie.
DeGraff just smiled and jerked a greener out of the rack on the wall and broke it open, loading the sawed-off shotgun with buckshot. Like Rusty had said, they was both men to ride the river with. I got a lot of congratulations on the walk down to Doc's office, mixed up with some pretty dark looks from the Circle L and Rocking Horse riders. There must have been 40 or 50 of them old boys in town, all of them all geared up and ready for trouble. I seen Pepper and her ma as they come into town in a buggy, driven by Rolf Baker. Half a dozen Quarter Moon riders flanked the buggy, her brother Jeff among them. And while those Quarter Moon riders might not have been hired guns, I could tell by the way they conducted themselves, they knowed what to do with them guns. Looked to me like the town of Doubtful might be getting awful interesting pretty quick. But I hope not too interesting. It don't take a fella too long to start thinking like a lawman. Just hang a star on. They make dandy targets. Stepping into Doc Harrison's office, I seen right off that the doc was mad as hell. He was kind of wide around the mouth, and his fists were clenched tight shut.
Tell me what you can, Doc, and keep it simple, please.
The girl was horribly used, Sheriff. She was not only raped, but violated in an unnatural manner as well. It's the most disgusting thing I've seen in all my years of practicing medicine.
I didn't know what in the hell he was talking about, but I wasn't going to show my ignorance by asking him to explain. If it was that disgusting, I didn't want to know no ways. So I just nodded my head and pretended I knew what he was saying. Cause of death?
Her neck was broken. Bruises on the throat indicate it was done deliberately by someone with enormous strength.
Big Mike popped into my mind. Or Junior. Both of them looked to be strong as hell.
Well, I know the family ain't got no money for no fancy burial, Doc. I'll ask around for contributions to help out.
I'll handle the arrangements with Martin Truby's funeral parlor. I should imagine the mother is too disconcerted to be of much assistance this time of grief.
Yeah, right. Disconcerted. That's her. See you, Doc.
Stepping out onto the boardwalk, I wondered who I might ask what disconcerted meant. Damn, but it's hell to be ignorant. Back at the office, I was pleased to see that both DeGraff and Bertel had armed themselves with greeners. There's lots of tough old boys who'll face a man with a six-gun in his hand, but damn few who'll stand up to a sawed-off shotgun, especially when that shotgun is loaded with ball bearings and nails and pieces of scrap iron. One time, I seen an old boy cut slap in two, catching both barrels of a greener in the belly. It was not a sight I was likely to ever forget. I looked in on AJ and Mike sitting on their bunks. Lawyer Stokes had been sent for.
What's the bond for our charges, Sheriff?
First time I could remember AJ calling me Sheriff.
Now that's gonna be up to the judge. Barbeau's been sent for.
I said that with a bad taste in my mouth, for I'd been told that Judge Barbeau was a personal friend of both AJ and Matt Mills. Both AJ and Big Mike smiled at that, and I had me a sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach that the rumors about Barbeau was true.
So that means the judge will be here sometime in the morning.
I reckon so. If he can get his lard butt up on a horse, that is.
I'd been told the judge was rather portly. As George put it, fat ass.
Well, Sheriff, you don't object if we have our meals sent in, do you?
Nope. That's about the only way you're gonna get fed.
That's very good of you. Since we've missed lunch, why don't you just step over to the cafe and order us something to eat?
There was some day-old beans in a pot and a half loaf of yesterday's bread. Guess what AJ and Big Mike had for lunch? The novelty of AJ and Big Mike being in the pokey had wore off some when I stepped back outside. But the mood of the town had changed. I could sense it. It was an ugly, tense feeling in the air. I had left Rusty and Bertel back in the office. DeGraff was making rounds with me. He carried his greener.
Trouble's brewing, Sheriff.
Yeah, I feel it. We'll stay out of the wolf's den. Ain't no point in us egging nothing on. That's what AJ's gun hands want us to do.
Sheriff, you ever heard of Jack Crow?
Yeah, he's supposed to be the best gun west of the Mississippi, but I ain't never seen him. Can't tell you what he looks like. Why?
Rumor has it he's on the way in.
I glanced at DeGraff. The man was about medium height and stocky, looking to be in his mid to late 30s. Both he and Bertel were about the same height and build, both of them appearing to be quiet and steady men. Not gun hands, but the type of men who would back a fella up and make the first shot count. Both DeGraff and Bertel were Western born and raised, both of them coming from a little town down in Colorado. But Jack Crow, now, that was something else. Jack Crow had built himself a reputation over the years as a tough, vicious gunfighter. Nobody had ever beat him to the draw. And he come real expensive. And when he left out of a place, two or three people was dead. The description of Jack Crow was vague, only one thing remaining constant. He dressed in black and rode a black horse. I wasn't looking forward to meeting Jack Crow.
You heard anything else about Crow?
Yes, and he's definitely on the way here with the promise of big money.
I nodded, thinking. I knew from talking to folks that Bertel and DeGraff had been cowboys all their lives, riding for the brand and loyal to it,
except for the last brand. I asked DeGraff about that.
Mills and Lawrence is evil people. There ain't no goodness in neither of them. They'll do anything to take control of the area. Anything. They're both power crazy, and I don't know what changed them. Maybe they was always that way, and me and Bertel couldn't see it. But we just couldn't take no more of it.
But they got everything now.
Seems that way, don't it? You or me or Rusty or Bertel, hell, most people, we'd be happy with just a little bitty portion of what they got. But they want it all, and they're bound and determined to get it any ways they can. And I'll tell you something now, Sheriff. Judge Barbeau is going to cut AJ and Michael loose. He's done it before, and he'll do it this time. Bet on it.
It came as no surprise to anyone when that lard-butted Judge Barbeau cut AJ and Big Mike loose. AJ said he tried to tell me that the horse with the chipped shoe had wandered up on Circle L range and some of his punchers had just brung it in.
Now, how do you explain all them other tracks that led straight from the burned-down house to your house?
Order in the court.
That don't answer my question.
Sheriff, you will show the proper decorum in my courtroom.
I just got up and walked out of that makeshift courtroom. His voice stopped me at the door.
I can and will hold you in contempt of this court, Sheriff.
I turned and smiled, but it wasn't no pleasant smile.
You don't have to do that, Judge. I got enough contempt for this court for the both of us, I reckon.
Order! Order! Order in this court! I say order!
Pickle barrel butt turned beet red. I walked out the door. Later on, I stood on the boardwalk in front of the office and watched as the Circle L and Rocking Horse crews rode out of town, AJ and Mike up amongst them. Neither of them gave me a second look as they rode out. But Joy and Wanda did. They was in a buggy.
Think you're some big lawman, don't you? Well, you're nothing but a saddle tramp, that's right. You'll learn who the law is around here, you trash.
I tipped my hat and smiled. Then they was gone in a dust cloud. The matched horses high-stepping. Them horses had more class than the gals. One of the men who rode in with Judge Barbeau come up to me.
Well, don't take this the wrong way, Sheriff, but if I was you, I'd hightail it out of this part of the territory. You've made some bad enemies, including the judge, I might add.
Well, that's a funny thing to say. I thought, from reading a few law books, that the judge was supposed to be impartial.
The man, he just shrugged his shoulders.
What side are you on?
Well, I ain't on no side. I'm paid to act as bailiff and bodyguard for the judge. But I know a bad situation when I see one.
Oh, yeah? I imagine if you spent much time around that big-butted judge, you've seen more than your share of bad situations.
He wouldn't reply to that. I stared him down until he cut his eyes away from mine.
You know what I think? I think if things was to get too hairy around here, the United States Marshals just might perk up their ears and take some notice. What do you think about that, Mr. Bailiff?
Oh, probably, but first, you'd have to get word to them, wouldn't you? Think about this, Sheriff. There's no telegraph here. Two stages a week, one road in and one road out. I'd give that some thought.
He walked away, leaving me pondering over what he'd said. Miss Pepper come up to me, stepping dainty-like down the boardwalk.
I could have told you what was going to happen with AJ and Mike Cotton. The judge knows his cake is iced on just one side.
He gets money from Lawrence and Mills?
So the talk goes.
Well, that's again the law.
But first, Cotton, you have to be able to prove it.
Yeah.
I told her what the bailiff bodyguard had said.
My father says that wherever Halfman goes, somebody gets killed. Shot in the back. But I imagine you know that. And my brother tells me that some gunfighter named Jack Crow is coming in.
Yeah, you're right about Halfman. And about Jack Crow, I guess.
She put a small hand on my arm.
You ride careful now, Cotton.
Oh, here come the goo again. It was a right nice feeling. I never had no one much give a damn about me. At least, not since I was left alone, years back.
I looked deep into her blues, and the feeling was like I was standing with my boots filled up with molasses.
Miss Pepper, I've been fairly careful about my back trail for a good many years.
Be extra careful.
You reckon it would be all right with your pa if I was to come calling?
I would think so. I'd certainly like that.
Well, if I ever get some time off, I'll surely do that.
I'll be looking forward to it.
Mayhaps a picnic would be fitting?
Yes, that would be nice. Let me know, and I'll prepare some food.
I must have looked sort of queer at that remark.
Sandwiches, Cotton. Not fried chicken.
I grinned at her. She walked off, that part of her sashaying. It was a right interesting sight, producing some other feelings to go with the goo. I stepped careful-like back into the office.
Huh. What you holding your hat down there for?
Shut up!
Seemed like damn near the whole valley turned out for the double funeral. Everybody, except for them partial to the rocking horse and the Circle L, had contributed to father and daughter's planting. And it was a nice funeral. Nice as far as funerals go. Lots of sad singing and slow walking, and some professional mourners come up from the next town, and they added a right nice touch to it all. They could sure moan. The Reverend Sam Doolittle got a bit carried away, and I could tell he was one of them preachers who was in love with the sound of his own voice. It took him more than an hour of shouting to convince the angels to come down and personal take up Miss Marie and her pa and escort them to the pearly gates. I was damn near ready to do some shouting of my own if they'd just hurry up and get here. No slight again, Miss Marie intended. Truby, he done it up fancy, rolling out his two black death wagons pulled by matched horses. And then everybody walked along behind the hearses after the services. Them paid mourners, they really got to moaning and carrying on as we walked to the graveyard. They sure earned their money. Marie's mama, she took it hard, naturally, but she held up tolerable well until the pine boxes was lowered into the ground. Then she fainted. It was just a sad day, and it got to me. And I could tell it got to Rusty and Bertel and DeGraff just as hard. Nobody with any sense likes to see no decent person took into the darkness that young, that savage, and for no real reason. After the graveside services, and Reverend Doolittle preached another sermon on the mount, we was walking back to the office. Pepper was with her family, when DeGraff pretty well summed up the sad day.
Pisses me off. It just ain't right.
My smile was very thin-lipped. Let's go get us a beer.
The boys, they picked up on that real quick-like, adding some hard smiles of their own.
Like at the Wolf's Den?
Seems like a nice enough place.
I slipped the hammer thong off both my 44s. The others done the same.
I'll open the dance, boys. Then we'll see who wants to pay the fiddler.
Then we all stepped inside the Wolf's Den. And it wasn't a real friendly bunch that greeted us. Wasn't on no signal from me, but my crew separated as soon as we was inside and our eyes had adjusted to the dimness. DeGraff, he had picked up a greener at the office.
Beer.
I ordered me a beer from a suddenly very nervous barkeep. Setting the mug down easy on the bar, I looked around. Miss Mary wasn't in sight, and I think the barkeep would have preferred to be nearabouts anywhere else but where he was.
Nice service today, barkeep. I understand why you didn't come, your job and all. But I think it takes a real heathen to sit in a saloon and suck up booze and party rather than pay last respects to a nice kid and her hard-working pa who died in a real nasty way.
You ain't welcome in here, Cotton!
The voice came from the rear of the saloon and to my right. Cutting my eyes, I studied the man. I'd seen him around over the years, a man who called himself Jackson Ford. I understand that back in Ohio, he called himself Matthew Ramsey, before he killed a woman and had to hightail it out west.
Oh, yeah? Well, I can understand why you wouldn't want to come to the funeral, Ford. Dead girl and all.
Might bring back some memories you'd rather not recall, right?
Ramsey Ford. He glared at me and mouthed a silent, ugly word. But he didn't speak it out loud. Halfman, the back shooter, was sitting by himself, his back to a wall. Halfman was not a real friendly sort. Always by himself. Either that or nobody else wanted to be seen with the jerk.
We did not know the young lady, Sheriff, so why should we attend her funeral?
I turned slowly, my thumb hooked into my gun belt, my fingers touching the butt of my left-hand 44.
Just common good manners, Halfman. But then, I reckon if you work for skunks, some of the smell is gonna hang on you, right?
Schwachsinnig.
I didn't have no idea what he called me, but I figured it wasn't very nice. If you're gonna call me names, make it names I understand. Using names I don't know is kinda like shooting me in the back, ain't it?
Halfman, he dropped his eyes, refusing to look at me, but his face was flushed. Halfman wasn't no gun hand. He could probably use a short gun, but he favored back shooting with a rifle from deep ambush. I turned to hide a smile. That and to deliberately turn my back to the room full of gun slicks. A plan was taking shape in my mind, but I also knew the plan could easily backfire on me.
You know, I just can't help but think about that poor widow woman with no husband and all them kids to feed. What you all reckon that poor woman is gonna do now?
Nobody said nothing.
Well, I think it would be kinda nice if somebody was to take up a collection to help that lady out. How do you boys feel about that?
I turned to face the crowded room. Rusty, he was grinning like a kid locked up in a peppermint store. DeGraff shifted his greener in his hands.
I think a singing would be nice, too.
My, my, what a grand idea. Yeah, sure. Sort of praising the Lord and helping them two souls on their way to the pearly gates. How does that sound to you boys?
My eyes touched Johnny Bull's. There was a twinkle in them. Oh, he might kill me if he ever got around to bracing me. But for now, he was finding the whole thing sort of funny. Johnny and me had never really been enemies. And we'd even rode a few miles together now and again. Looking around, I could see a few of the real gun hawks thought it funny too. But most didn't like it worth a damn. Or me either. And some, like Halfman, wore looks of pure hate on their faces. Behind the piano, the man wearing a derby hat all cocked back on his head was looking a tad green around the mouth.
You know any Christian songs?
Yes, sir.
Then play one.
Johnny Bull, he laughed at my singing, but he commenced to hum right along with me, grinning all the time. He was enjoying it. The crowd had begun to gather on the boardwalk, and it was growing in size. Then Big Mike come a-pushing and shoving through the crowd and through the bat wings.
What in the goddamn hell is going on in here?
You hush up that blasphemous talk, you heathen.
I turned to face him, my right hand poised over the butt of that 44.
We're having an after-the-service service. A praising the Lord and a helping that girl and her paw find their way through the pearly gates.
Have mercy and praise the Lord!
A Christian singing?
Yeah! Ain't that sweet of these old boys? Don't you think their mamas would be right proud of them?
No, by God!
Jackson Ford jumped up and knocked over his chair.
I'm gonna kill you, Cotton!
He grabbed Fryer. I let him get that hog leg all the way clear of leather before I drew. Ford sort of stumbled back against the wall and slid down.
Gentlemen, I'm gonna pass the hat now. Actually, Big Mike's hat, if he would be so kind as to take up the collection for Marie and her pa. Please?
Man, he turned about four kinds of red.
I'll return your hat to you. And bless your heart, Mike.
Sap tramp trash, keep the goddamn hat. Circle L Riders, clear out. Back to the ranch.
Johnny Bull, he kind of dragged his feet to be the last Circle L hand out. He stopped by me at the bar.
I didn't have nothing to do with what happened to that girl, Cotton.
I believe you. That wasn't your style, Johnny.
And it wasn't his style. Johnny Bull was a stand-up, look-you-in-the-eyes-and-shoot-you sort of fella. He was a hired gun, yeah, but of all of them, Johnny had him a queer sense of decency about him.
I enjoyed it, you know that? I really did, Cotton. Took me back years, back to when I was just a little boy.
Yeah, me too, Johnny.
See you, Cotton.
See you, Johnny. The Circle L boys were gone, but there was still some mean old boys in that bar room. Them that was riding for the Rocking Horse brand. And now I knew who was hired on to who. Still sitting in there was Penn Castell, Ford Childress, Fox Breckenridge, Waldo Stamps, Dick Avedon, Hank Hawthorne, Sanchez, Joe Coyle, and Tim Marks. I figured me and the boys had stretched our luck about as far as it was gonna stretch. Thanks, boys. The Widder Simmons will sure appreciate your gesture.
You like to live dangerously, don't you?
Sometimes.
I'll be waiting for you to call on me, Cotton. And make it soon.
I'll sure be there. Mayor Waller, will you tell Mr. Truby he's got himself another customer? But Truby was already hot-footing it up the street. The little fellow was quick after a shooting. I walked over to Juan's cantina and stepped into the beery dimness. A bunch of clodhoppers had gathered there after the funeral. I dumped the contents of Mike's hat onto a table. One of you boys see that the Widder Simmons gets this, please? It was given by some with a guilty conscience and by some who didn't have nothing to do with what happened during the night riding. One of the men who'd come to the office to fetch me that tragic morning stepped over and slowly counted the money, stacking it up, and it come to a right smart amount. He looked up at me.
It'll sure come in handy, Sheriff. We thank you.
Thank me when I finish them that done it. That's Big Mike's hat. He don't want it back. One of you can have it. A farmer got up, got the hat, and walked off towards the back, to the privy, unbuttoning his overalls as he walked. I had me a pretty good idea what he was going to put in that hat. Stepping out of the office, I took a deep breath and smelled pure spring in the air. And I knowed that for the most part, except for the real high up places, the winter was gone for this season. The smell of wildflowers was soft in the early morning air. A whiff of sage drifted to me. The odor of cedar and the sharpness of fresh cut pine was all mingled in. 1 week to the day had passed since Marie and her pa had been planted. A week of peace in the area. But I wasn't kidding myself. I knew that peacefulness wasn't gonna last. I'd heard reports that the Circle L and the Rocking Horse brands were hiring more gun slicks and were stocking up on ammo. I'd gone calling on Miss Pepper. We had us a picnic, with food that was fitting to eat this time around. I was kind of getting used to and liking that gooey feeling. When I brung Miss Pepper back to her house, and it wasn't no palace like the Circle L mansion, just a big house with a homey lived-in look, she'd kissed me, right on the lips, right there in front of God and everybody. I felt that goo change into quicksand, and I knew I was in trouble. But then, I've always been partial to trouble. Out of that quiet week's time, I'd spent 3 days of it just riding around the area, getting to know the lay of the land and some of the people. People like Walt Burton, who ran a small ranching operation. People like Pete Taylor and Lee Jones, who were also small ranchers. There was a couple farmers who ran some mighty big operations, Bob Caldwell and Bill Nelson, and lots of other men who was either farmers or ranchers or sheepmen. They all sized up to be pretty decent, hard-working people. Unlike a lot of them who spent most of their lives on the hurricane deck of a horse, shoving beeves around, I never objected much to sheep. I reckon that's because I've seen where and how sheep and cows can get along. There's always been plenty of talk about what sheep do to the land. Some of it is true, some of it ain't. If sheep are moved properly, they don't do no permanent damage to the land. And the sheep people I'd seen in the valley seemed to know what they was doing. I met some of the sheep tenders. Basques, they was called. Seemed like nice enough folks, but kind of suspicious of me at first. But then maybe they had good reason to be. I doubt if they had many good memories about coming face to face with cowboys. I'd hauled down a box load of books, most of them on the law, found them in a wooden box stored at the office, and had taken to reading at least an hour a day. I even took one with me when I went riding over the area. I'd read while I took my nooning. There was a book by Shakespeare there. It was interesting, but it was hard reading. It just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I took to them words written by Lord Byron, though. I mean, I really took to it. I toted that little book with me all the time in my saddlebags. I liked them lines that went, "Let us have wine and women, mirth and laughter, sermons and soda water the day after." That man, he knew what he was talking about, seems to me. I mentioned Lord Byron to Pepper. She seemed right impressed. Said she had a book by some fellow named Tennyson, another lord, and said she'd loan it to me. When I come back to the office one afternoon after my roaming around, there it was on my desk. She had underlined a passage with pretty blue ink and dated it. The date was the first day we'd seen one another. The line went, "Such a one do I remember, whom to look at was to love." I was sure glad none of the deputies was in the office when I read that. I turned as red as the lantern on a whorehouse door. The peacefulness ended. That morning, I stepped out of the office and tasted the summer. A rocking horse puncher come fogging up the street and slid to a halt in front of me, standing on the boardwalk.
"Rustlers hit us last night, Sheriff. Took about 100 head, mostly young stuff. Mr. Mills asked if you'd come out quick."
He wheeled and was gone, before I could say anything to him.